IVM.
कृपया ध्यान दीजिए, the language used on the podcast may not be fit for consumption. We warn you, tread carefully. But listen, yaar, don't be so conservative. Hello, Cyrus Says, world's least interesting podcast. So today is a huge day for me. I have a good friend coming on, one of the leading experts in the medical field and the running field, if you talk about as well. But before that, I took my first flight just now. In fact, I've just landed in a place called Anand, which means happy. Don't ask me why. And landed in Ahmedabad, first flight Mumbai to Ahmedabad, and first experience of being in a COVID flight. It was wonderful. They took the same time to allow me to enter the gate. That is the 23 minutes they take to look at your ticket, which I've never understood why it takes so long to read a name and a flight number. But, you know, no changes happen. The only thing is he stays behind a glass mask. After that, everybody was pretty bindas inside. Half of them had the mask on the chin. So I relaxed completely and realized COVID is over and we can continue as happy soldiers. Then on the plane, they gave us that ridiculous thing, the Darth Vader, Star Trek or Star Wars 1970s helmet, where you immediately feel like you're either a guy who's come to do some repair work in a house, you know, welding and that kind of thing, because that's exactly it. Or you're just from a B's sci-fi fiction show, which should never see the light of day. That also was removed, but including my manager, Pooja, who's somewhere in the background, took it off in about 3 minutes because it's very uncomfortable. And I'll ask Dr. Ashish Contract to this as I introduce him because it started hurting the head. So just want to say on Cyrus Says, this is not a complete world with COVID going on and plane travel is as irritating as before. Now let me mention and welcome Dr. Ashish Contractor. Hi, and welcome to the show. Nice to see you after a few, not so long, maybe 2 months, 3 months. All good?
We met 10 days ago at the Bombay Gym thing when you were running one Sunday.
Oh, right. That was 1 second I had to rush. Again, I had to rush for the podcast or something like that. I was rushing out.
Jacket and everything, which I was quite surprised.
My God, your unbelievable memory. That was a 3 second moment. It's not Marilyn Monroe, for God's sake. Yeah, 3 second moment. Yeah, you're with your running club. Ashish, for those people who don't know, let's just quickly mention you're this jewel. You're obviously a man who's achieved a lot in the medical field, and that's your main source of everything. But you're very much, but I don't think the word amateur is correct because you guys aren't amateur, you're obsessive and crazy, but you're very much a runner and in that sense a sportsman. And as you age, I think you guys run more. That's my belief. You actually you hurt your bodies more and you work harder at it for some reason, which we'll come to. But can we start? What we're going to do for the next 10-15 minutes is chat about you, and then we'll call in this man called Celebrity and chat about life in general. So we'll start with you. A brief introduction to the world of Dr. Ashish Contractor. How did you become this leading, what is the right word? Cardiac specialist?
Yeah, actually, so my core area is preventive cardiology. Sports cardiology is the sort of interest. And in my day job, I look after the entire rehab medicine and sports medicine at the Sir H. N. Reliance Foundation Hospital in Bombay.
That's true. That's where I saw you actually. A relative of mine wasn't doing too well. And we actually, well, I didn't see you there, but your hand of God came through, because the moment your name was mentioned, the water parted. You know, I hope that's the right biblical reference. I'll have to double check.
You clearly had a good flight, haven't you?
Ashish, you have to understand the difference about influence in India until you actually hear or see it. And I don't mean this in a negative way at all, but the fact that somebody, your name was involved at some level, and I didn't do it deliberately. It happened because we called you, and then you obviously spoke to your people there. The next meeting there, I was like a member of the staff. Everything changed completely. I'm sorry to say whether it's good or bad thing. I don't know, but this is the way India works.
I agree with you.
Don't do much about it. Sorry. So before we get into the fun part, but you've written a book, right? On
yes.
The heart truth, if I remember right.
Right.
A play on words.
Yes.
Which is what? Telling one how to balance one's life.
Yeah. It's basically not. Yeah. It talks about how to prevent heart disease. It talks about if you have it, what does one do about it? And once you had it, how do you kind of get on with life and you know, do what you want to do and not let heart disease stop you.
All right. You know, we had a doctor, Dr. Kapadia, actually a gynecologist on the show, young fellow. And he gave us a variety of stories on what he called the vaginal monologues. I have to tell you a lot of pressure here for you to top that. You've got heart. He's got the pelvis area. He's got the better guns available. And it was riveting because we had lots of questions to ask him, but he got stuck on a few stories he told us about patients. And they were hilarious. You know, patients who, let's use the word ignorance in the private area and doing all kinds of stupid things like putting instruments inside and then getting lodged there and how the good doctor had to, with a straight face, explain, because actually it is ignorance, nothing else. But this is not the place to keep a chico, for example. One of the stories. So hence, I know. So that just took the whole conversation away. So I'm just wondering whether you've got some artful stories to tell us from the heart world. Perhaps not so glamorous an area.
Unfortunately, it's very, very hard to top a chiku where the sun don't shine story. So,
but again, there's a parallelism trying to come to here, which is that there's a lot of ignorance, right? About people, we all have the same half-truths when it comes to the heart.
So you make a good point. You know, in terms of half-truths, it is like with all the information overload that there is available today, you know, you'd be like inundated with cholesterol and this and that. But people still, when they come in and they are, you know, 45 years old, father had a heart attack when he was, you know, 55, 60. The guy has chest pain while running or while, you know, climbing up the steps, and he completely ignores it, thinking it's gas. Argues with his wife, doesn't go to the hospital, and then 12 hours later lands up with a massive heart attack. So it's kind of shocking the level of, I don't know whether ignorance is right word, but denial that people have when it comes to this, it cannot be me kind of syndrome.
Okay, two things. One is it customized sort of situations where each individual is different and reacts differently to different things? Or are there some rules that we should follow? For example, as you know, I like to eat my eggs. I eat, Uncle Pilus actually used to eat a 12-egg omelette, which was horrible, like a pizza. But no, that's another generation. I eat 12 eggs after working out, always. Yeah. And I eat them full. Initially, I used to eat them white. And then we do our own research, the bro science that we follow. And I get everybody passing my table either tells me, you know, you're going to die. Oh, wow. It's always a mixture of, you know, wow, this is a very good thing. So here's my question. Is yolk good for your heart or not? Is there a cholesterol base to all this, or is it individual and you shouldn't generalize?
So you're not the only one. My brother-in-law, Rustam, whom you know very well, is also a big fan of the egg. Here's the deal. So initially, they used to think that egg yolk contains cholesterol, okay? Now, cholesterol is only present in animal products, not in plant products. And cholesterol eaten in the egg yolk does not convert directly to cholesterol in the body. So that's the great news, first of all. So it's not that by eating, you know, so exactly. Egg yolk and shrimp or prawns, which were the huge poison food all this time, are not the poison food they've been made out to be actually. So egg contains protein and a whole bunch of stuff, right? So the cholesterol in the egg is not directly converted to your blood cholesterol. And your blood cholesterol is the one which is, when high, harmful, it goes and sort of clogs up the arteries. Having said that, now here comes the kicker. I'm not exactly sure.
Here's your vaginal dialogues back on my face. A horrible truth. Go on, tell me.
I'm not exactly sure whether 12 will, you know, not do the trick. So here's a simple way of doing it, right? You said bro science. The best way to do it is every once in a while, check your cholesterol. If your numbers are reasonable, then heck, you know, your body's processing it pretty fine. And, you know, I hate to say it, you can go ahead.
Okay. So that's a good answer, because basically it's half and half here again for me.
Yeah.
So basically the science is there saying that it's not connected, the cholesterol from the egg and the cholesterol in the body. But you still, when you do anything in excess, you're saying you have to be a little careful and get things.
Exactly. Absolutely right.
Okay. A couple of more myths that we must talk about with the heart. What about oil and ghee? Because I heard that ghee is really good now. This is a new thing that everybody's telling me.
Okay. And see, everything, like you correctly said, you know, gets faddish after a while. You know, you've got people that, okay, let's go, you know, our Indian way, and desi ghee is good. And now anyway, you know, all of this is very in the atmosphere we live in as well. And the point is that, you know, ghee is full of saturated fat. Okay. And that's why ghee, when you leave it at room temperature, also solidifies. Now, all these years, we thought that saturated fat is not that good for your heart or is not good for cholesterol. But now more and more it's coming out that, you know what, maybe it's not that bad. So it's got a lot of parallel to the sort of egg yolk story where we're saying that, okay, ghee is not taboo anymore, but that doesn't mean you need to go to town with it and sort of, you know, actually sort of have it by the spoonful. So having it in moderation should be fine. And again, the best proof of the pudding is measure your blood work. If your blood work is fine, it just means that overall, because of genetics or whatever else, your liver is processing it pretty fine and the numbers aren't really rising in your bloodstream, and that's fine.
But also, you look at culturally over thousands of years in places like the North or even Gujarat, where I am right now, ghee is, I mean, it's there in the cooking.
Yes.
So do you think that there's a possibility that the generation gets strong and sort of almost like a vaccination of sorts?
No. So I've got two answers to that. In those thousands of years ago, people didn't exactly take a flight from Bombay to Ahmedabad or take the car from, you know, Ahmedabad to Anand, right? They walked or they used public transport and they were in the Kheti all day long and, you know, probably getting their 10,000 steps in even before.
So fitter.
Yeah, they were fitter. They had a lot more physical activity. Also, something we don't talk about, they were also popping like flies before the age of 50. So our average lifespan, not until too long ago at the turn of independence and everything, was much, much lower than what it is today. That time, no one called it a heart attack. Just even off the gaya would be the, you know, like a light bulb coming on and off. Even off the gaya, and that was the end of that. No one labeled it as
a heart attack. Yeah. All right. Just cut there for a second. Right now, the average Indian life cycle would be, what, about 60?
No. It's higher. I think it's women are slightly more than, I think it's closer to 70. I don't have the exact number, but it's roughly 70.
Horrible number 69 comes to mind immediately when you see a little less than 70. Doc, you've scored one against Dr. Kapadia. You get one here.
You are stuck on the guy, and I get your mind away from there.
You're a resurgent Liverpool. You will rise again. Don't worry. So what you're saying is that that's all nonsense. So going back and saying that they're hardier because of years and years of eating or drinking something, it's all about individual blood work and where you stand as a personal individual in a certain situation with a specific product that you're eating or drinking.
Well done, sir. Yes.
Just let's make this clear, because I think everybody, I get a lot of advice from people who are non-doctors when they pass my table, for example. I'm sure everybody feels the same way. And after some time, everybody has this 20% knowledge, which is hugely dangerous. Is it not?
It is. In fact, I have a joke with that. I tell my patients when they get discharged from the hospital, one big question they always have, and this is, of course, pre-COVID, is that after going home after a heart surgery, we should not have guests and nobody can come in and the patient should not talk. And, you know, they believe all of that. And I tell them, guests are not a problem. The problem is that everybody, once they enter the door, they become a cardiologist or a cardiac surgeon immediately. Yeah. So just ask them to leave their advice out at the doorstep, much like in India, we leave the footwear out at the doorstep. Just leave your advice and come in and talk everything else.
You made a fantastic point. I just think about it. If someone is recovering, everybody takes a shot at being a doctor.
Exactly.
That's absolutely right. It's like, go. Have you tried this? Yeah. Take it for 3 weeks and you'll be great. Yeah.
Exactly.
You know, my aunt had this problem. Just do this and
absolutely.
You'll be fine. Right. Oh, that's a beautiful thing. This is what brings cognitive functioning of the human mind that brings us all together. Idiots who think they're medical professionals. All right, there's lots to talk about, not that much time. Let's move to part two. I want to quickly ask about COVID.
Okay.
I know we've
okay.
discussed this on another forum before. How do other diseases and all, what happens to the rest of the illnesses while we focus on COVID? It's not like they go away, right? All the heart ailments and problems that, say, you're dealing with.
Yeah. So actually, it's quite interesting. In the first few months, What happened is a lot less people actually came in for emergency. Now, again, there were two types. Maybe because people were just taking a lot more care, there was less need. But again, people were scared to come in. So there were a lot of people who came into the hospital too late. And that was one of the bad sort of side effects of it. But in terms of a lot of the diseases we suffer from in India, the infectious diseases, gastrointestinal disease, malaria, all of that. So BMC just a couple of weeks or 3-4 weeks ago in the newspaper, there was an article of how a lot of the infectious diseases that fallen, you know, rapidly, because we all learned to wash our hands, which we never did quite as sort of vigorously or seriously as we did during the last sort of.
I never did. I didn't even wash after urinating. I felt it was a waste of time, to be honest, Dr. Ashish Kontakter. I didn't see the correlation, honestly. Unless the penis was dirty, which it probably wasn't. Why? Especially when we were young and, well, you know what I'm saying. Sorry, let's get back to you.
Okay, so remind me not to high-five you the next time we meet, but...
Or shake hands solemnly.
Okay, yeah. No. So the point is that I think it was a mixed bag because a lot of the infectious diseases did fall. But I'll tell you something very interesting we saw. And it's not interesting, actually. It's quite sad. So like I told you, in my department, we look after rehab of sort of all the, you know, systems. And in the neurological side, we had a large number of people who during these 9 months, they actually died. The thing is that most of them are suffering from illnesses which are chronic. But the point is that the amount which actually died was disproportionate to what we would see in an ordinary year. Now, I don't necessarily have an answer to that. Was it because they, you know, that they were seeking less medical care? Was it that they needed medical care and they didn't come when they should? And I also think loneliness and just being completely cognitively deprived, as you sort of put it earlier, has affected people in very negative ways. I mean, I don't necessarily have a study to throw at you to prove that, but just seeing people, I mean, you see people around you and they've just slowed down, especially the ones whose families have, for right or wrong reason, just not let them out of the house for all these months.
Yeah, so what you're saying is, which I, the bro science expert, have been saying from the beginning, is that people's minds being affected, depression, especially those we know who live alone, elders, as you speak of, who are locked up in a room and are mollycoddled and suffocated to a point where they lose their bearings.
Yes.
All this actually goes against us in the long run if you've got something already up.
Absolutely. I think there would be nothing wrong in going down in your building compound or the terrace and going out and walking. So I think that these people who've literally been locked up, I think the downsides of being locked up are far. I had an interesting story. So I've got this patient and they live really far away in the northern suburbs. And his mother is about 70 years old, has been a dear, dear patient for a very long time. And I encouraged him to get her in because she used to really miss coming to the hospital. And he said, no, family members are saying no. But then one day he told me something. He said, you know what, doc, I'd rather take my chance with COVID and have my mother die of COVID if that has to happen versus sort of, you know, the way she's going downhill currently. So, you know, obviously the choice shouldn't be death on either side.
I know, it sounds almost vulgar, but I totally get it. I support this guy. Because what's the point of having a life which has no life?
Yeah.
You know, on the other side of it.
Yeah.
But then again, okay, let's not say this or that because then someone will hold us to it. But just finishing on this final point on this whole COVID mess that we've had for the last 12 months. So do you think we'll become a stronger world for it coming out of COVID? Or are we going to completely panic now and say there are millions of viruses we haven't discovered, which are still to come? And this is the tip of the iceberg, because both these thoughts have been just looking at it from perspective.
That's a brilliant question. And I think human beings at the end of the day are resilient. And it will, I think we will come out stronger. We will change the way we live slightly, not dramatically, like this conversation we have having. I mean, we could have had this pre-COVID as well, but now it's just so much more an accepted way of life. So I think to some extent, things like work, travel, and all that will slow down. And I think people will be just more conscious and conscientious, but I think we'll go back to our old ways at the end of a few years.
Once an alcoholic, always an alcoholic. Never forget that. And I'm in Anand. By the way, I have to find out, I'm in Madhuman, lovely place. It says it has a wine shop. Pooja, who's in the background, please investigate.
Really?
What are we doing with a wine shop in the middle of the heart of Gujarat? So this is live. Any authority listening to this, please understand, we are just telling you what we saw. This is not a complaint. We're not for or against. Quickly, before we get in, Silvery, I want to talk about the running side of you as well. Obviously, you know, and in fact, it's amazing that you do, because considering that you've got this high position, a lot of responsibilities, you're an out-of-the-box sort of doctor as well, always thinking of different things. How do you balance the day? Because that'll be a good example for people who say, I got no time to work out, I got no time to run. But you guys do, what, 3 or 4 huge runs every week?
Yeah, I think it's honestly a matter of priority. You know, I really think that this excuse of not having time for anybody, it's not just whether it's a doctor or whether it's, you know, whoever it is. I think it's a matter of priority. There's always time for doing something you frankly want to do. And I ironically hate waking up very early in the morning, but, you know, the long run and the long bike rides can happen only early in the morning. I prefer running in the evening, but when we need to run more than 10-12K mornings, the only time. So I think it's a matter of priority and it's not a matter of time. Time's always there. There's no question.
Were you always like this, into a sporty sort of side and all that, or as you?
I was always into sport. I played tennis, if I might call it, semi-seriously during, you know, 8th, 9th, 10th standard in school. And then the typical Indian thing, you would decide between sport and between academics, and there is no halfway path. So went down the academic thing. And then when I finished, you know, my MBBS, I wanted to do sports medicine, sort of reconnecting back to the old passion, and then I've gone to the US and did sports medicine. And there is actually when I saw people running and long distances. So in university, you would see, you know, old, young, fat, thin, like that Pied Piper or Hamlin, right? Brown rats, tawny rats, right. Rats, old rats, wow. Everybody doing it. While growing up, you always thought that the marathon was something that, you know, only these, you know, lean, super fit, you know, 5 kilo people could do. And that's when it opened up that, you know, everybody could do it. And that's kind of where it started. And the illness has never left me ever since.
Yeah, they also run in the West. They also run at all times because of weather being what it is, which is something now I'm seeing in Mumbai as well during lockdown. A guy running at 12, at 3, at 5, which will suit you because I think you like to mix it up.
Yes, I do. I do run at night sometimes, however stupid or crazy that sounds. Yes.
Just don't wear very short shorts, sir, because they're all times prowling. Yeah, parents will be proud to know they bagged a doctor. Anyway, one or two words about the running community. But how do you guys cope? I know we've discussed this before, but this is for our show where we have 11 different listeners. How did you guys cope during COVID? I know my wife being crazy about this whole running thing and all, first started running just in the lane.
Yeah.
You know, I think there was the inspiration of the Chinese gentleman, if I remember correctly, who ran on the spot like a nutcase for 4 or 5 hours. I think that also begs the question is, what do you do? Necessity being the mother of invention. What did you do?
I was lucky enough that I live in good old Khushrubagh. So sort of within my own complex, you can...
So nobody stopped you in Khushrubagh running. I'm talking terrible March, April, because there were even...
I used to start at 5:30 in the morning. So if somebody had to stop, they were asleep probably before they stopped. But
have you not heard of Parsi Dairy? There'll be some Parsi Doodwala. What do you say?
The Doodwalas must stop, boss. The Doodwalas...
Oh, that's right.
Leave their stuff at the entrance. So, you know, Khushrubagh actually was walking right through the lockdown. You know, they had their masks on and they were well behaved and everything, but sort of very early in the morning. I know my runners friends, I won't name names in case the BMC is still looking for them, would play sort of chor police, literally with the cops in and around the sort of Gateway of India area. The cops would stop them and then they would quickly run the other side and then go around Mantralaya and Gateway of India and do like 3-4 loops. But for the first couple of months, I was pretty much stuck to Khushrubagh. So after that, things opened up a little bit.
No, but still, so Khushrubagh is a decent sized place. For those who don't know, Khushrubagh is a decent size.
Yes, actually.
You could manage your run. You could manage in terms of...
I can get an 800 meter loop in, which is, you know...
So that's good enough under stress. So you actually didn't miss anything in terms of... maybe the quality of your running was a little different, but...
So ironically, I was in the first few months of the lockdown, I was at my fittest. Because I didn't miss a single day of work. I would come to work, finish everything at 7:38. You know, we got a small gym section in our rehab thing. I was the only one there. Would go quietly, did my workout, sanitized everything, and left. And
I'm sure the word "he must be a baba" must have been somebody must have said that outside in passing because they all worried about their lives. And the Parsi gentleman said, "I'll just bend
current." Something like that. And then come home on Marine Drive, being the only car on the road, was almost surreal, actually.
Yeah. Oh, that. Now, you know, I hate to say it again. It sounds vulgar to say it, but I'm almost missing the lockdown because suddenly all the Indians are back, the Mumbaikers, and the traffic and the holes in the ground. And that first, that May, when we started venturing out a little bit, you know, it was like you see Hindi films in the 50s and 60s where the old Fiat is there in the background. Just one or two passerbys on Marine Drive in the short. The obscene truth is that there was some good in that. As the great Kunal Vijaykar, India's finest philosopher, told me one day at Ballard Estate shooting on Sunday, India is such a pretty place without the Indians.
Trust Kunal.
we had a nice shot of all the background buildings and architecture the British left behind. They may have left COVID behind also. We don't know. We just discovered it now. One last question before I call him in, Silvery, for the AMS and other things. Were you scared, doctor, being a medical professional? This is an honest question, bit unfair to ask. But you know that first March, April period where there's certain fear was taking over. I think people decided whether they were going to get over the anxiety or not very well right then. So how would a doctor, how did you personally deal with that? Were you scared yourself?
At the risk of sort of false bravado, the honest truth was I wasn't scared because when you just go into doing stuff, you know, once you're going into doing something, you don't sit at home all day. Like I said, I was at work every single day. So there wasn't that time to. The only thing I was scared about, again, to be honest, are my parents because they're both, you know, over 75. So when I used to go the first couple of months, they live in Karigar Colony, which, as you know, is pretty close by. So I used to go and I used to They used to be on the first floor, and I was in my car. I used to get out of my car, wave, speak a few sentences, and just sort of go off. So I didn't physically meet them, I think, for, you know, April, May. But not personally scared, because right from the beginning, I had this sort of theory, and I think it's kind of proven right, that Indians were somehow much more resilient. So our death rates, and that's, we can still see that, is far, far lower than the West. So yeah.
As we speak, we're at the lowest ebb in Maharashtra, Mumbai at least. Yeah.
Even at the peak, when we looked at our numbers, you know, per million population, or, you know, per, you know, looking at population, was significantly lower than pretty much anywhere in the world.
Not bad. Is it true that Parsis can't get COVID?
Okay, I'll tell you this story that you will love this story. Okay, you especially will love it. The first two Parsis who got COVID in Khushrubagh were both over 80 years old, were down badly, but both came home smiling. And one of them got it by going out shopping for mutton in the market.
Hey, greater good. Even for the, you know, the end justifies the means. All acceptable. He should get the Padma Shri, no less, for that experience. But good news at the end, they were okay.
Yes. They came out of it, so which is fantastic.
I've actually had a couple of people tell me this. Even got a couple of emails on the or texts on this show saying, do Parsis get COVID? Are they more resilient? Is it possible that one group of people could be more resilient than the other in this kind of thing? Or
It is possible if they have a certain kind of a genetic makeup where a certain protein, you know, in their system may or may not be there. So it is possible. It wasn't there in the Parsis, but it is technically possible.
It's the Jains. They have it all. I tell you, the Jains. They're untouchable now. Just kidding around. Love the Jains. Okay, we're going to call in a gentleman who's Punjabi from Powai, but stayed in South Mumbai as a young boy and actually learned cricket at police ground. He's horrible at sport, but he's a stand-up comedian and producer of the show. Silvery, also known as Antariksh, can you make your presence felt? But first, a small break. Follow me at Instagram and Twitter on Bored Brocha. I'm so bored, I need your help. I need your love. I need your touch. Okay, just follow me. Now the break is over. Now you can make your presence felt.
Hello.
Silvery, my daughter saw your haircut and was quite impressed. Huh?
Oh, okay, cool, man.
We've been studying Native American tribes, and I must say, the Comanche themselves had something like this. Most ferocious of all
the tribes. Okay.
Say nice. Hi to the doctor.
Hi, doctor.
How you doing?
He's the only one not interested in your pet name, Silvery. He's the only guest who's not asked why is he called Silvery.
Yeah,
nobody cares.
I was polite because I knew you would say it before the next sentence was over.
It's such a long story, we can't repeat it. It's very boring.
Yeah.
Suffice to say, it's a Punjabi nickname. You can
that's
do the rest.
That's normally Bobby or something, right? I know it's Silvery.
Bobby, Vicky, Lucky. Yeah, all these. Yeah, Jolly. Silvery, are you feeling bad? We'll give you the Parsi nicknames. Have you heard of Pilus for Firoz? There's no connection.
Okay, no. I'm fine with Silvery. No, I don't want Pilus. Silvery is fine.
How dare you? All right, sorry, Doc. So this is the end is now. He's going to ask us anything. There's people writing in. Hopefully, there'll be some medical questions because we asked them to write in about your specialty. Go on.
Okay. This one is not exactly medical related, but kind of. Gauri Kalra asks, hi, Cyrus, guest and Silvery. Big fan of the show. My question is, what do you think is the best breakfast, especially for days you know you will need a lot of energy? Also, what's a staple breakfast for you?
This is right up his alley. As a sports scientist, I think, and a guy who runs in the morning, etc. Doc?
Doctor?
Actually, I thought you were asking Cyrus that question. Because
no, my breakfast is the same. They're not interested.
The pizza, eggs.
Well, I would love a pizza. My eggs are coming right now.
I often have a little bit of yogurt and muesli. Sometimes just plain toast butter. Once in a while, an omelette or a scrambled egg. So sort of mix it up. Nothing fixed. But
she's asking for that higher energy boost, the bullet coffee, so to speak, breakfast. When you're having a long day, like the day I'm having today, for example, you start at 3:45 and end late night. What would you eat then as breakfast, as your big first meal?
Again, nothing. Sorry to disappoint you. I don't have any of these fads. So no bulletproof coffee for me. Just regular tea or regular coffee works. Plain old toast, butter, Baked beans, if I'm at a club and having breakfast there, I love the South Bombay Club masala baked beans on toast. Akuri, which is our good old Parsi eggs. And
this is all pleasure eating, Doc. What about, see, you're not into this whole, there should be a little more energy created from the meal because you have a 14, 15 hour day vis-a-vis an 8, 9 hour day.
Not me personally, no. I mean, no, I don't really change it. Because what ends up happening is people normally expend 200 calories in their workout and they have a breakfast of 700 calories and then they wonder why they don't lose weight.
All right. Gauri Kalra, who may be Vivek Kalra's sister or wife or something, because that's an email pops in quite often on our show. I hope your question has been answered. My bro science would say that eat lots of carbs in the morning. I'm a big fan of carbs in the first half of the day and then stop. But that's mine. I'm not going against a good doctor. I was already giving me a dirty smile.
It's fine. I had sourdough bread from good old...
there you go. It's right outside your house. It's not fair.
I actually got it from there. She makes them.
Exactly. Yeah. But hop on that for a second. Is there any credence to the theory that carbs earlier on better for the body? Is there any sense to that?
Carbs end up forming the mainstay of your energy. Okay. So obviously it does make inherent sense that if you're starting off in the morning and you're going to need sort of energy throughout the day, if you had a bunch of carbs in the morning, it would be helpful and useful. So yes, your bro science is not wrong.
Oh, wow. Come on. What's a doctor, Silvery? MBBS.
Bro cha science.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah. One for the comedian. All right. Next.
Yeah. All right. Next one comes in from Karthik Kansara. He asks, hey, Cyrus and guest, what do you think of fitness levels in cricket today versus about 10 years ago? It almost seems like a day and night difference.
Ashish, are you into cricket, born to footy?
Absolutely. No, I am. I mean, in a sense, a lot of the Mumbai Indians and cricketers even come to hospital for their, you know, checkups and tests and all. So absolutely no question about it that compared to 10 or even 15 years ago, the level of fitness in cricketers is at a different league. Remember the days of good old Bishan Singh Bedi and all where they would sort of be ambling along on the boundary line to pick it up, and they were all fantastic and talented cricketers, but clearly, you know, fitness wasn't their forte.
Yeah, fair enough. But that is also not just to do with sports. Don't you think that people are just looking at themselves more and trying to find more time to become healthier and fitter in that sense?
So that is
between the 90s and 2020, there would be a shift.
Yeah. Yes, there is. That is true.
Yeah. Except for this young man, he does nothing, not even a push-up, for God's sake. And suddenly you would be 40 Silvery. And then Dr. Ashish contractor works on your heart because for 40 years you neglected everything. And that would have helped. Of course, it gives him more business, so it's fine. Go ahead.
Exactly. It's fine for doctor. Exactly. All right. Next one comes in from Harvesh Kasar. He asks, hey, Cyrus, sports science has reached next level. Do you think sports medicine is equally important in a non-physical sport vis-a-vis like e-sports or something?
Sorry, that just sounded funny.
It sounded funny, yeah.
Not like esports. I'm old fashioned. I'm an 80s, 90s generation guy. So I can't understand how esports is sports. I know a lot of people from your generation and the next are going to argue this point and fight for. Yeah, Rod, please.
So again, I mean, I kind of am on your side on this one, Cyrus. I don't think that if you're playing a game of poker or rummy, you need to necessarily be this. But hey, having said that, okay, in all seriousness, people who play chess also take fitness incredibly seriously, because one of the reasons is that, you know, this old saying of healthy mind and a healthy body. So the fitter you are, you know, your sort of brain cells and oxygen all over your body. And, you know, maybe the esports guys need really quick reflexes and their thumbs to move quickly. So, yes, I mean, I don't think it's as relevant as in so-called physical and real sport, but definitely being fitter will help you in esports as well.
Gary Kasparov, who, by the way, wanted to become Parsi, himself, one of the greats of the chess world, used to squat 450 pounds for reps, huh?
Wow.
As training, not as a fun thing, as part of his training, because physical and mental acumen has to be equal at the point of performance. The whole body is a temple.
He squats the same amount of weight that you bench press.
Well, I'm not cross 400, Baba. My strength, I don't know, at this age, I'm staying where it is. It's a little tough.
Yeah, I think you're not having enough eggs. Maybe that's what it is. Your protein
I
seems
think I need
to
a girlfriend.
Like...
That'll help my test level go up. If you know anyone in Khushrubad that, you know, some elderly 70 plus going for a walk who doesn't wear a mask,
we'll put the word out. There are lots of young, innocent 70-year-olds in the community.
They all have class, boss. They all have class. Not going to do that. Yeah. But so, okay. So the answer to that question is 50-50. Maybe. We're not 100% sure. Esports may need some physical contribution as well. Go on.
Alright. Gautam Pai asks, for a runner, what is a good shin conditioning exercise? Also, jumping / high knees gives me back pain the next day. Is there an alternative to that?
What is the first part? Shin.
Shin conditioning exercise. That's a runner's thing, I think.
Basically, shin splints are quite common. There isn't a specific shin conditioning exercise, but in general, a lot of people get these things if there are muscle imbalances. One thing that runners tend to ignore is weight training. And Cyrus will be happy to know that, you know, strength training or weight training is important even for runners. They don't need to bench press 400 pounds, but
listen, if I had to make an amateur jab at it, I'd say for running, the quads are too dominant and the hands are not so dominant. So you'd have to train the back part of your legs and the core and your lower back much more. I keep telling my wife that when she says this is paining, that is paining.
I think runners do tend to, you know, neglect weight training, and a little bit of that will be helpful. And if somebody's getting pain, back pain with high knees, I mean, they should just stop doing that. You don't have to do high knees. There are a bunch of different exercises you can do.
Yeah, really. Why do you have to kill yourself? It's not like you're in a competitive sport or something. You're just doing this for fun. I think people should remember this is a fun part of your day. And stay the ruthlessness and the clinical effort for your real work or whatever else you do. Celebrity, what the hell do you...
Have you seen the women your wife runs with? You think that is just fun for them and they're not competitive?
Ashish, I look over the computer and I see the messages and all. They're aggressive. Forget competitive. Highly aggressive. I mean, I would think that the East African runners are far more, you know, decent in their conversations and all.
They're lethal.
Parvin herself, you know, calls a spade immediately and puts someone down straight on their face, and that person then recoils and wants to run even faster out of some kundas. Listen, there's a politics that goes on in your little circle of runners, which is vicious. And I think as bad as our politicians at the center or the state government level or whatever. So I think human nature is just something that we have to explore more.
Parveen has taken up this new heart rate style of running, so she actually doesn't talk while running. So can you imagine Parveen being silent?
That's like a manat, no? There must be some sort of oath or something. And we are talking about a common friend who, by the way, Sylvie, we've done a podcast with her. She's in her mid-60s now, or maybe even more, I'm not sure. And she's getting faster with every year. I don't know if it's a tribute to the Parsis, or it's actual truth. You can ask him. She's hit some higher timings in her 60s than ever before. Which is like,
and she goes around now city to city collecting prize money.
Yeah, if not for this lockdown, she'd have done four countries this year. Just like a professional runner, because they've got this huge circuit. So remember, if comedy fails, you could become an athlete in your 60s and run from Montreal to all the way to Myanmar. Well, maybe not Myanmar, but just stop short of Myanmar. And you can collect prizes along the way. She actually makes a living. Excellent. Yeah.
I just remembered something talking about marathons. That doctor, I read that you have done a marathon from Mumbai to Pune all the way. Is that right?
Let's just clarify. That was a bike ride, and we went, and we were the first year we rode Mumbai to Pune, and then the second year we said let's do something even more stupid and even more mad. So we rode from Mumbai to Pune, didn't stop there, and rode all the way back. The only good thing is that the side effect was that we raised money for children with cancer at St. Jude's, and I call it three idiots because there were three of us riding. So I call it that
on one bike.
No, not on one bike.
For the tandem bike.
We were stupid, but not that stupid. So three idiots riding on a bike, and you won't believe it. I want to show off about this. We raised roughly 1.2 crores for charity for these for the St. Jude kids, just because of three idiots riding one Sunday morning.
Note to self, let's start our own charity. It's a much better business than anything I'm doing. And you get to bike ride to Pune in good weather and back, and stop at Mehrwan's to have a mawa cake as well.
Absolutely.
Durabji, on the other hand, are you happy with the standards?
They're happy, but if I had to go to Pune, I'd probably pick up the Mazurin chicken sandwich and head back.
Fair enough. Silvani, do you know your Pune at all?
Almost not at all, no.
Okay, then stay out of the conversation when adults are talking. Just, you know, do your own.
Okay, last question. This one comes in from S. Kumar. This simple one. He says, working out and running with masks, yay or nay?
This he's been asked on another forum. One of his pet peeves. Let's hear.
Okay, so low intensity working out with masks, yay. In terms of having any ill health effect with masks, yeah, there's no problem with it. But if you're uncomfortable running with a mask when you're by yourself and, you know, you're out in the open, you can lower it just like this is right now.
Right. So they keep running. You can't stop in the middle and then, you know, have a conversation with somebody, bystanders, because that tends to happen with some of the less intense runners. But I know you won't catch him. He'll talk with his colleagues, but he'll not stop. Won't miss a beat, to use a phrase. A terrible pun. Ashish, this has been a pleasure talking to you, but I'm in Anand, where I'm with a group of 80 women achievers.
Wow.
That's one way of looking at it. So, off I go to my destiny.
Thank you, sir. All the best. Into the jaws of death, into the mouth of hell, wrote the noble.
The valley of death, wrote the 600. Well, me and Pooja. During COVID, low budget warriors. Yeah, that's us.
Enjoy. Thank you. Thank you, Sri. Thank you, Cyrus. Good
Have
fun.
Have a good day, Ashish. See you, Sri.
Pretty quickly. See you soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, catch us on any of the podcasting apps, please. We beg you, we need you. Send us your questions on Twitter on Cyrus Says In, or you can email us, even if you're not female, on whatcyrussays@gmail.com.